Something for the Girls, another all-star salute to waves in navy blue. In our Navy spotlight, the distinguished actor, Mr. Ronald Coleman.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? In dedication to the women in navy blue, serving alongside the fighting sailors of the United Nations, we offer you a sprig of laurel laid upon the crypt of a deed. Gene Fowler's unforgettable and stirring story, The Jarvis Bay Goes Down.
Bulletin from the London Bureau of Associated Press, November 6, 1940. The Admiralty reports the sinking of HMS Jarvis Bay while on convoy duty in mid-Atlantic.
She's an old freighter of some 14,000 tons standing in the roadstead of a port somewhere south of Singapore. She lists a bit as if wearied by the typhoons of the China Seas, by the whole gales of Tasman, by the turbulence of wind off Borneo. Her gear is obsolete, her iron skin blistered, pocked with rust. Her engines are rheumatic, and her sawtooth screw will yield less 14 knots. She is the old Jarvis Bay, of Australian registry, resting between tides from her obscure drudgeries somewhere south of Singapore. She nods at her mooring cables, head bent to the dry monsoon. The Jarvis Bay is nodding, half asleep, when a gig draws alongside, and there is brought aboard, solemnly, a flag with a blue field, a storied ensign, emblem of Britain's naval reserve. This of itself becomes a rousing circumstance to one so frowsed, so drably sleeping somewhere south of Singapore. Up the starboard ladderway there comes a new master, puffing somewhat with middle age. He looks about, he looks above, below, forward, aft he peers. His is the manner of a man recapturing a memory.
I'm on a ship again. My ship. The Borch Creek. The smell of tar and oil. Everything the same except myself.
He is Fogarty Fagan, called from retirement to command the Jarvis Bay. For 10 years, Fogarty Fagan has walked in his English garden, watching the roses bud, the violets bloom, enjoying each miracle of season that brings white blossoms to the hawthorn hedge. But now he has left his barrow and his slips to bring the storied ensign with its blue field, blue as the violets of his garden, bringing it from afar to the old Jarvis Bay.
All right, all right. Let's be at it. Lively, men.
His voice rolls against the breakwater. His big hands grasp the teakwood rail. He swears a bit, and finally the Jarvis Bay awakens. Soon, a battery is supplied, a small one, guns of 5-inch caliber. Then, with 100 young reservists for her crew, the Jarvis Bay puts out to sea from somewhere south of Singapore. Captain Fogarty Fagan has a distant rendezvous with other old masters, summoned from retirement, called by their king from their little farms, from their office stools, from their fireside chairs, from the cities and the shires. The threefold war, earth, sky, sea, beggars the world. Ships go down, each day go down, and bottoms must be had to bear cargoes to Britain. Now, up comes the Jarvis Bay, up from tropical waters, through Suez, through the Strait of Gibraltar, out and across the Atlantic, and to the Americas. In a harbor of the north, and with brave haste, the old hulls are laded to their loading lines with cargoes for Britain. Captain Fogarty Fagan listens to the rumbling of winches, hears the Samson posts creak, hears the chains and blocks complain, Harry's his first officer, Mr. Wilson, with commands. As things needful for the life beat of England's great heart are stowed aboard.
Harry! Stand there, Mr. Wilson, sir. We're not sleeping now, Mr. Wilson. Somewhere south of Singapore.
From a Canadian bay, from behind the fog bank of November dawn, a convoy line puts out. 38 ships put out to sea with cargoes for Britain.
10,000 cases of powdered milk, 200 truckloads Red Cross supplies, 400 cases vitamin concentrate.
A consignment to help sustain the life beat of England.
100 cases surgical instruments, blood plasma, wool blankets.
Goods to provision an isle that for 1,000 years has prized the freedom and the dignity of man. The gun crews of the Jarvis Bay sleep beside their battery. They seem young seminars with Parker hoods, cowling their heads to keep out the cold sea rime.
I can't sleep.
Why not?
I keep thinking about home. I just got married.
Well, you better get some sleep then. You'll be home soon enough.
Night falls, a great and somber hymn. The night of November the 4th, 1940 years since our Lord, is an anthem of wind and small following sea. The morning comes like a priest upholding a golden monstrance. The morning of the 5th finds the Jarvis Bay and her convoy strung like a procession of pilgrims against the dawn. The ship's bell sounds, the practice rounds are fired. The sun is on the meridian, and Fogger de Fagan shoots the sun for latitude. 8 bells again, and Fogger de Fagan shoots the sun for longitude. And then at 5 o'clock, the lookout calls from the crow's nest.
Ships are off the starboard bow!
Through his glass, Fogger de Fagan makes out smoke, a black gargoyle in the sky, east for southeast. Then sights a ship hull down. And now, a battleship comes boiling over the horizon. She opens fire with heavy guns. Captain Fogger de Fagan telegraphs his engine room to strain the boilers till they burst. He bellows, curses, brings to bear the pop-guns of his battery against the Goliath armor of the battleship. Sends up smoke to screen the fleet. He orders all the convoy ships to scatter wide and fast. Then Fogger de Fagan sets out alone to meet the battleship. 5-inch guns against 11-inch guns. Eggshell hull against crop plates. Damn you, Mr. Wilson, sir. We're not hearing mandolins today somewhere south of Singapore. This is a mad thing to do, this sea charge of the Jarvis Bay. Yet a sky of dead admirals looks down from the Grand Haven, looks down at Fogger de Fagan, whose senile tub steams bows on for the battleship. Nelson, Drake, Beatty, Harwood, yes, and the Americans, Porter, Farragut, and John Paul Jones, all look down in wonderment. And now a burst of shrapnel rakes the Jarvis Bay and tears the right arm from the sleeve of Fogger de Fagan. He does not fall. He grasps the teakwood rail with his other hand, masking his agony with bellowings that rise above the guns. Nor will he let the tourniquet be placed upon the stump. He waves the stump. And Mr. Wilson knows, and the sky of dead admirals know, that if a hand were there, it would be making a great fist. Still steaming toward the battleship, Fogger de Fagan keeps his little guns ablast. The eyes of the setters and of the pointers grow black and blue from the recoil. Their eardrums dead. The salvo comes with the top roll of the battleship. And now the ensign, emblem with the blue field, is shot away. Enraged, bloody, rocking on his heels, Fogger de Fagan roars, "Hoist another ensign, damn you, Mr. Wilson, sir! Hoist another flag that we may fight as Englishmen!" The Jarvis Bay, ablaze from stern to bow, at dusk still fires her puny guns and will not change her course. salvos from turrets, guns 3-3, make great geysers grow about the old ship's wake, but still her guns give voice. And now she's struck below the waterline. Her boilers go. The Jarvis Bay begins to settle by the stern, yet sinking, still she faces her antagonist. Then the waters begin to close over her. The waters close over Fogarty Fagan and over the flag that once was used for burials at sea. And now night spreads its shroud. Of 38 ships in the convoy, 29 are saved, their cargoes saved to help sustain the lifebeat of England. While from the sky, dead admirals look on and claim Captain Fogarty Fagan for their own. The Jarvis Bay goes down. Goes down as no mere casualty of storm to rust out fathoms deep in common grave with sisters unremembered by the years. The Jarvis Bay, of Australian registry from somewhere south of Singapore, goes down in the history of an isle that for 1,000 years has prized the freedom and the dignity of man. Friends, the Jarvis Bay is a symbol of America. In our great art galleries, there are paintings that symbolize America, too. A farm in Ohio, Coney Island on Sunday, a gas station on the desert, and smokestacks above Pittsburgh. But the best action picture of America today is the Navy throwing a bridge of ships and planes across the ocean. The bridge on which the Army is marching and fighting to victory. Navy courage, Navy devotion to America are an American tradition born before Washington was president. Indeed, it was George Washington who said, "Without a decisive naval force, we can do nothing definite, but with it we can do everything honorable and glorious." Navy's glory is the honor of the individual, not only of the man, but the woman. The story of American women serving their country is not a new one. A long time ago, a handful of women stood behind log stockades, fighting at the side of their men. Today, as this story goes into its greatest chapter, the same kind of woman wears the blue uniform of the Navy Wave. She walked out of a world of beauty shops and department stores, and theaters and offices and evening wraps and flowers, into a world of Navy administration, radio engineering, link training, and air tower control. Of aerial photography and maps and trucks to fill all but a handful of jobs in order that her man can go down to the sea in battleships. The Navy Wave is an American girl who would rather wear a gingham house dress than a uniform, who would rather create life than help to destroy it. That's right, an ordinary American girl. The same kind of girl who has fought beside her man and her country since 1776.
Thank you, Ronald Coleman, for that memorable narration of The Jarvis Bay Goes Down. The original musical score was composed and directed by Meredith Wilson. Our thanks to all of you for appearing on this Navy program, Something for the Girls. And now an important message for young women 20 to 36. Do you have a man who is fighting for you and for our country? Do you want to prove to him that you are the kind of person that he can always depend on in a crisis? Then, by all means, get a copy of the new free booklet, The Story of You in Navy Blue. It tells you and it shows you an actual photograph how you can become a wave. Write for your copy today to Waves, Washington 25, D.C. That's Waves, Washington 25, D.C. And listen in again for another star-studded program of Something for the Girls. This is Frank Martin saying goodbye to you for the Navy's Waves. America's first ladies, were helping to speed the day of victory. And now, a further word for you.